The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking level, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a Thursday. I wish today was Friday, because after the last few hours, the last thing I want to do is talk politics today. But we have to, because of what just happened. I'm so disappointed in our government. I know you're shocked to hear me say that, but I am. Really? So under the guidance of the Democratic president, Joe Biden, who's a union guy, he's a labor guy, they have overridden the union vote call that said, we will sign your contract. We will have this deal, but you got to give us some paid sick time. And Bernie Sanders came up with an idea. All right, let's add to the deal that was negotiated 2 months ago, but that 4 out of the 12 unions that represent the 115,000 railroad workers rejected. And they rejected it not because it didn't give them a raise. It did give them a raise. Why they rejected it is because it didn't give them any paid sick time off. Now, if you are a working adult and you're working on the railroad, chances are you're going to have medical needs. You're going to have to go to the doctor once in a while. You know what they say? Use your paid vacation days. No! That's what vacation is for. This is why unions exist, to protect the workers. But this president, this union president, said, we're going to cut a deal. No, no, no. Trucker John says, stop bashing Biden, Nicole. Blame the Republicans, not him. I do blame the Republicans. The people I don't blame are the congressional Democrats, who for the most part voted the right way. I blame Joe Biden for making this deal, saying, you know what? Fuck the workers. It's more important that we don't tank the economy. It's more important that there's not a strike that will hold up the delivery of those precious holiday gifts. It's more important that we side with the giant corporations over the working stiff. You know what that is? It's
bullshit.
It's bullshit. We have bad audio today? Lovely. This is just what I need. Okay, hold on 1 second. Let's see if I can't fix this. Tell me if this makes it any better. My audio went watery after I yelled into the mic. Great. Oh, and now it's gone entirely. Hold on. All right. How about trying this? Is this any better? Okay. It just cleared up after I played the sound bite. Okay. I'm beside myself. So what happened is, fix the audio. I thought, oh, it's back. Garbled audio. Okay. Hold on. Let's do it this way and not that way, and see if that's any better. Hopefully that's better. Ugh. All right. So I'm watching you guys in the YouTube chat. You got to tell me. The GOP House is fixing to hold up funding. You got to figure that into the equation. I don't have to figure anything into the equation, but thank you, Mythical Nomad Adventure. You're telling me that it's garbled again? Oh, well, hopefully it isn't. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to do, okay, no, it's good now. All right, it's good now. Let me know if it gets garbled again. It shouldn't. So Joe Manchin voted the way we knew he would. He said no. Now, yesterday, I told you all this. Yesterday, the House voted and passed it. So there were 8 House Democrats who voted against the bill. But, you know, we went over that yesterday. Let's talk about today, where it went to the Senate. And what they needed was 60 votes because the Republicans filibuster everything. So Yeah, here, let me pull up so I'm not flying blind here. Let me share some of how I was following how the votes came down. And so it was strange bedfellows, like really strange bedfellows. First of all, somebody voted present? Who is that? I can't tell who that is. Howie posted a picture of somebody, and I can't tell who it is. Well, Howie Klein is here today, so you know what? I should probably hold off on this rant till he gets here. You know what? I think I will, because I'm going to repeat all of this anyway when Howie's here. So I do have something else that has me in a bit of a tizzy today. And by now you've probably heard it. So this hateful fuck, this rapper named Kanye West, oh, excuse me, now he's Ye. Well, I'm Cole. Give me a break. So Kanye West, who is a piece of shit, goes on today with Alex Jones, another upstanding member of society. And he even disgusted Alex Jones because, well, the man who claims he's not a Nazi sympathizer said this.
You're not Hitler. You're not a Nazi.
This is Alex Jones.
You don't deserve to be called that and demonized.
This is Kanye West.
I see good things about Hitler also. I love everyone, and Jewish people are not going to tell me. You can love...
He loves everyone except the Jews.
Us. And you can love what we're doing to you with the contracts. And you can love
pornography?
This guy that invented highways, invented the very microphone that I use as a musician. You can't say out loud that this person ever did anything good. And I'm done with that. I'm done with the classifications.
We're done
Every
with you.
Every human being has something
of value. You human
value
piece of walking excrement.
Especially Hitler. How about that one? Ari Emanuel, how you like that one? Hey, Ron, you going to do anything to fix Chicago? They want to separate and confuse the Christians and make us afraid to stand next to each other. A Christian can stand next to anyone. We can go visit R. Kelly in prison.
You go visit R. Kelly in prison. You go talk to Harvey Weinstein.
Because Jesus can save everyone. But if the Zionists can get us so afraid that they're going to do what they've been doing to me, attempting to put me in jail, freeze my accounts, smearing me on the media, you know... All of these things, you know, you put on the whole armor of God and they will not be able to break your spirit.
Listen to me, you fucking piece of shit. Jews don't have to smear you. You do it yourself. Oh my God. If you ever bought any of this things, music, burn it. And you know, I'm the last person to say to burn a record. Or a book. But, oh my God. Deep cleansing breath. I'm going to share with you a column that was this yesterday's paper? Yesterday's Miami Herald. And sadly, it will be one of the last columns by Leonard Pitts. Leonard Pitts has been writing a column in the Miami Herald that's syndicated nationally for, I want to say, 20 years. And it's one of the reasons... We subscribe to this crappy paper. I don't know that there's any reason to keep it because on December 14th, they will publish his final column because he's retiring. Yeah, William or Will I.M.S. says, who cares one word what clown Ye West has to say or think? I don't. But you got to call out this shit because you can't let it sit there. And... Reginald asks, how do I feel about the firing of Tiffany Cross? I'll tell you, but not right now because I'm about to read this, but I think it sucks. Okay, so Leonard Pitts, let me put up his picture here because Leonard Pitts, an African-American or black man. I know a lot of black people don't like being called African-American because they're not necessarily. Unfortunately, yes, he's retiring after... Oh, 31 years. Forget 20, 31 years. I want to share with you the column that he wrote yesterday. And it ties into the Cretan Kanye West. I like that, Lucifer. Kanye. Leonard Pitts writes, Joe Engel died last week. It's unlikely you will know the name, especially if you don't live in Charleston, South Carolina, his hometown since 1949. Joe never wrote a great novel or made a scientific breakthrough. His accomplishment was less gaudy, yet no less significant. Joe lived to tell. I met him in 2005, the 60th anniversary of the end of World War II, on an assignment to write about an interfaith pilgrimage to Holocaust sites in Poland. We visited murder factories whose names still bespeak the immensity of evil, Treblinka, Belzec, Majdanek, and Auschwitz, where Joe was sent in 1942 at the age of 14. A little over a million people died there, but somehow he did not. Every morning, he said, you could see hundreds of skeletons, not human beings, just skeletons, bones. The only thing you saw was bones and a big nose. We used to pick them up, and they used to take them to the gas chambers. One time I asked him a question, don't remember what it was, that probed a memory too painful to revisit, and his lively eyes turned soft and sad. He said in gentle admonishment, it's no picnic talking about it, you know. I apologized. It's all right, he assured me. I don't mind. I want the people to know, especially the young people, to prevent another Holocaust. There are, according to a nonprofit reparations group called the Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany, just 280,000 survivors left worldwide, a tiny handful of aging men and women, fragile lives winkling out like fireflies under a summer twilight. Soon, there will be no one left to say on firsthand witness, this is what happened. This is what it was like. It was a duty Joe took seriously. He spoke at schools, led at least 5 pilgrimages of return, and was known to sit on a bench in Charleston with a sign around his neck, Holocaust survivor, waiting for someone to ask. One night in a restaurant in Poland, he lifted a glass and said in his immigrant's English, don't you ever forget me, so long as you're going to live. You tell this story for us because we're not here to tell the story. He was looking dead at me when he said it. It gave me the chills. And it fuels frustration with an era when so many seem hell-bent on forgetting, on spurning the lessons for which Joe and so many more paid so dearly. The Nazis systemically murdered 11 million people, 6 million of them Jews. The rest, homosexuals, communists, labor unionists, Jehovah's Witnesses, the disabled, all for the crime of worshiping, thinking, or being different. That's a September 11th attack every 10 days. And for what? As Joe said, quote, we survivors thought after the war, there's no more war. That's the end of everything. But you can see now that's what's still going on. People still killing people and everything. Things didn't change. We were at Auschwitz when he said that. I recall feeling that we, the generations after his, had let his generation down. The feeling has only intensified in the years since. As Jewish cemeteries are vandalized, as synagogues are attacked, as a pop star spews anti-Semitic bile, as migrants are caged and their children taken, as a church in Joe's hometown endures a racial massacre, as hate crimes rise, as states restrict the remembrance of atrocities, and as some of us pretend all of this isn't what it is. Joe's frustration at what did not change stays with me, as does his belief in the importance of telling the story anyhow. But above all, I can't escape a conviction that we owed him, we owed all of them, much better than this, and that we still do. Leonard Pitts is a national treasure. I'm so sad that he's retiring because this is a voice we need. Kanye West should read Leonard Pitts and understand from somebody he should look up to the things he doesn't quite understand. Hi, David.
Kanye isn't going to give a shit what Leonard Pitts says.
I know, but because he doesn't
know Leonard Pitts. With him.
Right, of
course. There's a couple of other names that Kanye should look into.
Yeah.
First one's Mickey Schwerner. Second one is Andrew Goodman. You know who they were?
No.
They died in Mississippi so black people could get the right to vote. If it wasn't for Jewish people like Mickey Schwerner and Andrew Goodman, Kanye might not be the wealthy individual that he is for being able to market his art under the contracts negotiated by these horrible Jews.
Oh, when he calls out Ari Emanuel. You know, the reason you were a billionaire for a half a second before you blew up your career, asshole, was because of people like Ari Emanuel. I don't care what religion they are. It's a guy who was good at his job. Oh, my God.
Well, and the company that made him a billionaire for a half a second was a company started by a fucking Nazi, Adi Dassler, who started Adidas.
Uh-huh.
But again, look into Andrew Goodman and Mickey Schwerner, Kanye, and the many other Jews who gave their time, their lives, and of less importance, their money, so that black people could have the modicum of equity and equality that currently exists in the United States of America.
Right. Well, that's true. And here Patrick in the chat room says, any of these clowns exist because we give them 5 seconds of our attention. But if we didn't call them out, would we be just sitting back and, you know, silence is complicity? Remember that. If you don't speak out and talk back and fight them on this shit, then you're giving them free rein. Look what's happening at Twitter. There's a reason I don't leave. I've locked my account. I'm posting now on Mastodon a lot. But we can't just, you know, let them take the territory like we did with radio. You know, radio, again, I come from radio, right? When I started in radio, my first big job in New York City was producing at a talk radio station. And on that same station was, you know, news, just straight news, nonpartisan, you know, not conservative, not liberal, but straight news in the morning, followed by a radio psychologist, followed by a financial guy, followed by Barry Gray, who was the resident liberal, followed by another, I don't know, whatever show, followed by Bob Grant, the resident wingnut. We had all different views and opinions on the same radio station. That's how it used to work. And then, you know, then the ideologues took over and radio was destroyed. And talk radio is now the land of the maggots and the wingnuts. You hear very few liberal, progressive, even centrist voices on the public airwaves. Cable TV, the same thing. And look, MSNBC, that they fired Tiffany Cross is a travesty. It's disgusting. There was no reason for it. But you're not allowed to criticize. And MSNBC, look, there are a few shows on there I like. I like Chris Hayes. I like Ali Velshi. I like Mehdi Hassan, but he's not always on MSNBC. Stephanie Ruhle, I can take or leave depending on the day. You know, there are a few others who are okay. And I actually like Nicole Wallace because I think she's smart and she's gotten very good at her job. However, what I don't like is that MSNBC has become the home of the Never Trumper. It's the Never Trumper channel. It's all these disenfranchised Republicans who now have so this guy Glenn in the chat room, when I was talking about the Nazis, he posts in my chat room, and I'm about to block him in a second, I was talking about the Nazis, and he says, and they're still active in Ukraine. Are you fucking kidding me? So you're parroting the Vladimir Putin and the right-wing dreck that's what this is about. That's not what this is about. Are there Nazis in Ukraine? Probably, just like there are here in the U.S., just like they are in Germany and in France and in Italy and everywhere else, unfortunately, around the country. But for you to pull out that shit, Glenn, you can go fuck yourself, because that's not true. The Ukraine is not run by the Nazis. You tell Volodymyr Zelensky that he's a Nazi. His family was killed by the Nazis. I'm offended by that. And you know what? I think that Glenn is going bye-bye. Bye-bye. He says he follows Howie's recommendations on which candidates to support. Well, you can find out by reading downwithtyranny.com, because Glenn Risden is now banned from my chat room. I have no patience for this shit today. Absolutely zero. Zero. More Nazis here in the U.S. than in Ukraine. Chet, you got that right. My God, what is wrong with people? I go through this whole thing about the rise of Nazism and anti-Semitism and ugliness in this country. And this moron comes in my chat room and starts sounding off, oh, they're running, they're still in Ukraine.
Bullshit.
Again, yeah, there are Nazis there. Unfortunately, they're everywhere because there are stupid people everywhere. But don't give me that shit. Don't come into my house and give me that crap. I'm just over it. Over it. So when Kanye goes on Alex Jones' show, I didn't play the video because why? The gurgle has returned again? Hold on one second. All right, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to fix it once and for all. Give me one second because I must have the wrong thing posted here. So we're going to do this one. We're going to do that one. That. Okay, and hopefully that fixes it. You guys let me know. We do have Nazis here. We saw them in Charlottesville. We see them every day. Every day. You don't echo what they say by agreeing with their lies. Come on, right?
Come on, man.
Come on, man. Now it quit, right? It's clear now. I fixed it. I got it. Yeah, nuance is lacking in some, it seems. Well, Glenn's gone. Glenn, you're not welcome here. You see, it's not like I'm a mass appeal show. I have, you know, for somebody who's been doing this for as long as I have, I have very few listeners. And it's probably because I don't want somebody like that listening. If that's how you feel, that, you know, Ukraine is run by the Nazis and that's why Russia invaded you, well, I got a song for you.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. All right, I have something. Oh, God, did I close that window? I have something that I've been... Oh, okay. Well, Spocko just saved me. Hey, Spocko, what's on your mind?
Well, I just thought I'd give the Twitter report for Elon Musk.
Okay, well, what the fuck is going on Twitter? Because, I locked my account. I'm still tweeting, but... It's gone. They suspended Dean Baker. Dean Baker, who is an economist, CEPR. He's one of the few economists that doesn't make my eyes roll back in my head. Dean Baker? He's one of the original OG bloggers. They right. suspended him?
So here's what's going on, and I think it's related to what you were talking about earlier. You might have heard that there was a threat that there was going to be a removing the Twitter from the Apple Store. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did hear that.
Okay. So there was also a story the other day about how the EU, the commissioner said that Twitter needs to follow the EU regulations about hate speech, yes, moderation, etc.
That's right.
And so there was an interview with this. They talked about this. And then yesterday, there was a post from Musk saying, well, I had a nice talk with Tim Cook down at
Apple. Tim Apple.
And so what's happening is, because of the way that he laid off at all these people, he then says, I'm going to rely on the AI, on the policies that still exist. And the person who is in charge of the trust and safety policy says, that's not going to work because AIs aren't very smart. They will find somebody like Dean Baker,
right,
because of something that they said earlier, and they will ban them.
Hello.
And there's no easy human being repeal process, because that takes somebody to look at it, a human being to look
that's
at
right.
it.
That's right. And they don't have any working there anymore.
Exactly. So what Musk does, he says, hey, they say I'm supposed to do content moderation. I'm going to crank up the moderation on the AI. And also, I'm going to take people to self-report. So like someone says, hey, I don't like Dean Baker. He's Antifa. And they will report him. That kicks him off. It also kicks off a bunch of the Nazis, since supposedly they were kicked off too. And there is no appeal process because all the people were fired. So that might have been what happened with Dean Baker. And the point that I want to make to people in terms of Twitter is, we have to remember that a tremendous amount of harm is going to come from Musk letting all these people on. There's not going to necessarily be a harm from cutting people off like, you know, Dean Baker. But there should be something done because the other day I heard Alejandro Cabrillo, she was the one who brought up that the Apple Store might kick them off. Why? Because the terms of service in the Apple Store says you can't have hate speech. You can't, you know, do these terrible things.
Right.
Otherwise, we won't let you on.
Hello. So it would be them, Elon Musk's
yes.
Twitter, going against the rules, breaking the rules, and thus his app can't be in the App Store.
Right. And so here's how this thing's worked. And this is the other thing that I want to say, point out, because I work with Silicon Valley. I know, here's what they'll do. He's going to kick the can down the road. He said, oh, yeah, totally, Tim. We're going to follow your rules and just give us an excuse to keep it going for a while. You know, just like, you know, keep it. Let us experiment. And he put out a tweet yesterday, tweet 2.0, that said, our new Twitter, we're just trying things. Now, it ignores the harm that's going to come to all these people because he's trying things. Twitter had rules in place. They still have them, but they're broken. They don't work well. And people will be harmed. And the only pressures that we're having now, it was like the Apple people saying, use those rules. We have them written down. Or the EU saying, we will ban you in all of the EU if you don't follow these rules. And they are articulated. They're not just opinions. They're very specific. And by the way, I spent the other day reading the Twitter rules, and they are been developed over 10 years. They anticipate certain things like gaming the systems and bots.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. And so they should be done. This is what we're looking for and hoping. I think Musk is not going to do it unless there's some kind of pain to him.
Of course.
But again, we're ignoring the pain to all the people that he could stop. He doesn't have to keep doing this stuff.
No.
But he's doing it, and he should pay a price to get back to something safe.
Absolutely. And now there are reports that Twitter can't meet the payroll. Even after they've fired 3/4 of the staff, nobody works there anymore, but the few people who remain aren't getting paid on time.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing, for a man who's supposed to be smart, I've seen no evidence of it.
Well, you know, and the other thing is smart is there's engineering type smart, and then there's marketing smart, and there's personal emotional intelligence smart.
Common sense smart.
Yeah. And we're giving him And this is the thing. The media, I think, has a hard time talking about this because there, again, it gets framed as a speech issue. And it's not necessarily a speech issue if you're talking about opinions or whatever. That's why I think we need to focus on how he has defined it.
Yeah.
And how, and look at the Apple rules too, yep. because those aren't just, you know, for anybody. That's one of the rules that have been articulated, and it's not, oh, I have a different opinion. It's
right.
I will come and kill you if you do this. That's what will get them kicked off.
I hear you. Hey, Spocko, I got to run because right. this is Thursday and Howie's coming along.
Yay.
I'm just wondering, are you mixing up the Dirty Debbies today? Because I need a triple.
I don't.
What? The Dirty Debbie. Here, you listen. We get the Dirty Debbies and you get free sweet and low. I'll talk to you later.
Are you okay. a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes and they're all fresh.
You're going to love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary
sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, hi, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole. How are you doing today?
Oh, you know, I'm just peachy keen. I'm I tomorrow, let me tell you what's going on tomorrow, because I'm much more excited about tomorrow than today. Tomorrow, I have on the show for the hour legendary record producer Bob Ezrin.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah. Bob and I worked together 20 years ago. We made internet radio history together. So we'll tell that story and, of course, talk about his work producing, you know, Pink Floyd's The Wall, Peter Gabriel's first album, Alice Cooper.
Yeah, I always think of him as the Alice Cooper guy.
He is the Alice Cooper guy, but he's a lot more than just that. But he produced Alice Cooper from the beginning.
Yep.
So I hadn't spoken to him in 20 years. We taped it last Friday. It's wonderful, and it's just no politics. So after today, I don't want to talk politics, but I'm glad you're here, Howie, because, oh boy, I've been kind of holding off until you got here. There are a couple of things that I do want to talk to you about. One is they've passed the torch in Democratic leadership, and the good part.
Yes, you were arguing with somebody about the great liberal Hakeem Jeffries.
Yeah. Somebody, a radio colleague of mine, actually had a caller call in concerned that Hakeem Jeffries is not very willing to work with progressives. And this person took his head off, yelled at him, called him a liar.
Oh,
a liar.
Who is it?
A liar because he's part of the Progressive Caucus, don't you know? And she read a quote from him when he said, "I'm a black man and a progressive." Well, shit, what else do you need to know?
Well, right. It depends how you define black man. I mean, progressive. I mean, anyone
Touché.
Can say they're a progressive.
I know. And
you know,
anyone,
it doesn't mean anything if they're not, especially if their role in the last election was to defeat progressives, which
yes.
his was.
Right. You know, it's one look, I've got many listeners and callers who disagree with me. I'm not going to call anyone a liar. Well, except the guy who's like, oh, the Nazis are in Ukraine. Fuck you. But, you know, someone who's calling to say that
you know, there are some Nazis in the Ukraine.
I know there are. And that's what I said.
There are in Washington.
Exactly. They're here. They're in Germany. They're in France. They're in Italy. And I'm sure they're in Ukraine. But Volodymyr Zelensky is not a Nazi. And if you want to say that the reason the Russians attacked is to denazify Ukraine,
yeah.
then you can go fuck yourself.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just crazy. You don't have to, you know, tell him to fuck himself, but he's just wrong about that. Right. He's read a lot of right-wing propaganda, which keeps repeating that over and over and over again, because they think if they keep saying it enough, people apparently like him will come to believe it.
That's right. So, I was pissed off already because of, well, David Cicilline, I thought was going to be sort of like a voice of reason and leadership. He was going to challenge. Look, Nancy Pelosi said, all right, I'm going. Steny Hoyer said, okay, I'll leave leadership too, even though I'm supposed to be the heir apparent. Jim Clyburn says, I'm 82. I'm not done yet. I'm staying in leadership. Joan Goose said, well, I want that leadership position. But when Jim Clyburn said, no, I want it, he said, all right, you take it. I'll go back in the corner. And then David Cicilline.
Well, not exactly in the corner. They made up a new position for him, and it's actually not a bad position.
Oh, good.
It's a good one.
Okay, that's good. So then David Cicilline says, you know what? It's a very diverse leadership group now. Not a white man among them. But you know what else isn't there? There's nobody gay. So how about we have the LGBT community represented? I'm going to run for that position. And mere moments before the election, David Cicilline pulls out. Gee, how convenient.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I mean, the whole thing was weird. He just decided, or at least announced it yesterday, that he was going to challenge Clyburn. Presumably he went around, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm assuming he went around and asked his colleagues for support, and they all said, nah, can't do it.
Yeah.
And he realized he didn't have any votes, basically. I mean, yeah, I'm sure he had a few, but he didn't have enough votes to make a credible attempt. So he pulled out this morning.
Yeah, he did.
It's a shame. I was kind of hoping he would run.
Me too.
He's very sensible when it comes to policy, like more than most of them.
Yeah, no, I like David Cicilline. Every time I've heard him get up and speak, he makes sense. He's smart and he's not afraid. Too many of them back off. So that already put me in kind of a foul mood, because Greg, I'm glad that the torch has been passed. I'm glad there are some younger people who are going to step up into leadership roles. I understand Catherine Clark is not bad. So, and Ted Lieu is also in leadership now, it too, isn't he?
Not just in leadership, but they sort of maneuvered it to make Clyburn's position kind of like a not very powerful position.
Okay.
Basically, no matter what they call him, he's really just going to be an advisor to Hakeem Jeffries, who doesn't usually take advice. So Ted Lieu is now in the number four position.
Oh, good. Okay.
Caucus. He's the vice chair of the caucus, which is a stepping stone towards being speaker.
That's great. I feel so much better because of that. So much better because of that. So good news. Okay, so I'm elevated.
More good news on that front, by the way, before we go on to something else.
Okay.
This is something that I feel extremely proud of, and I'm speaking before it's final, but I'm pretty sure what I'm going to say is true. So, you know how I've been like really upset about the DCCC chair going to one of these two really awful new Dems? And
yes,
we've talked about it on the show here. So one is Tony Cardenas from Los Angeles, and the other is Ami Bera from the suburbs of Sacramento. And they're both crooked in a really big way. So in the case of Cardenas, he is credibly accused of raping a minor.
Oh, my God.
Who he groomed for quite a long time and then covered the thing up in a really horrible way. So that's him. And there's a film that talks about it, but the film isn't out. But the filmmakers made a trailer, which is really good. And I've been using that on my blog, driving Tony Cardenas insane. I mean, literally driving him crazy. He goes, every time I post it, he has a fit.
Uh-huh.
And I'll get to that, what happened with that in a minute.
Okay.
But Ami Bera isn't any better.
No,
Ami Bera it was involved in a campaign fundraising fraud with several other Democrats, and when he got caught, he blamed it on his sick 80-year-old father, and the father went to prison. Not jail, he went to prison to protect his son. So, you know, that guy does not deserve to be the chairman of the DCCC, doesn't deserve to be in Congress. But so we have two awful candidates. The other two candidates who thought about running both pulled out. So it was just these two. And what I did was I sent the post that I've been writing about Berra and Cardenas to lots and lots and lots of members of Congress. I've never done this before. I reached everywhere I could, including to non-progressives.
Wow.
And some of them went to Hakeem Jeffries and they showed him the video. They went to Pelosi. She already knew all about this anyway.
Wow.
She was involved in the cover-up. But what they started getting nervous, especially when they found out that the NRCC, with the Republican version of the DCCC, has the video.
Oh, right. My God.
So what they did is, so here Cardenas is like bragging to everybody, you know, screw Howie Klein, we got this, we got the votes, it's going to happen, we're in. The day of the vote, Wednesday, was supposed to be the vote, yesterday, the caucus decides, well, we're not going to have a vote.
Ooh.
We're just going to let Hakeem Jeffries pick somebody.
Okay.
And he has until February 15th. Well, I think that's the date. It's definitely February. He has until February something.
Okay.
To pick the DCCC head, and then the caucus will just vote yes and approve what he says. This is the new anti-democratic Party, by the way.
but better really that than you know than vote for the worst person.
Right. Well, right, exactly. So in any case, what I'm hearing from him is he's not going to pick either one of these clowns.
Good.
He'll pick another clown. And possibly someone who's not a member of Congress. So in the past, that has been the case.
Right.
They, you know, sometimes they pick people who weren't in Congress to run the DCCC. It doesn't have to be a member.
Just like the DNC. I don't think anyone was a member until Debbie Wasserman Schultz did it and blew everything up. And now they go back outside again.
Yes.
Right.
And, you know, there was a time when someone who had been a senator was no longer a senator but had
right.
never served in the House, and
was.
They made and he was the first chairman of the DCCC.
Huh.
The first chairman never served in the House, and there he was. He was a terrible chairman, but he was a chairman.
Yeah, they're talking about Tim Ryan, aren't they?
Sorry?
So I heard Tim Ryan's name thrown around.
Tim Ryan is one possibility. I don't think that he's going to get it, but they definitely are talking about it, and he might get it. You know, he's terrible enough to fit in. In any case, so I feel really, really good about that. You know, today was supposed to be a big celebration for Cardenas that he was going to be the head of the DCCC, literally today.
Wow.
And he ain't celebrating today, I'll tell
Aww.
You that.
Too bad, Cardenas. Too bad. Yeah. Okay.
No, I wish I had a tape of all the names he called me.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I had somebody on the show on Monday that I knew who he was. I actually met him about a decade ago when I first got back into talk radio here in Miami. But during the election, during the primary season, he was one of the few voices who on Twitter and elsewhere was saying there will not be a red wave. This is not happening. The Democrats will be fine. They will pick up seats. They will, you know, who was like a voice of reason?
Michael Moore.
No, not the other one. There was Michael Moore and there was this other guy.
And I also was saying it, by the way.
No, you were not. You
sure
were saying
I said there will be no red wave. I didn't say the Democrats are going to win. I said there would not be a red wave, and it would be a couple of votes on one side or the other.
Okay, well,
I wrote about it the whole cycle.
Okay, well, Simon Rosenberg. So I had Simon Rosenberg on the air, and we were doing just fine until he started saying that the problem that the Democrats are going to have is when they. The problem is when they primary each other, and they've got to stop primarying each other. I'm like, are you kidding me? Wait,
that's horrible. That's a horrible, anti-democratic.
Exactly,
position.
Exactly. And it turns out, you know, he's the head of NDN, which, and he's the one who formed the New Democrat Coalition in Congress.
Right.
And so this is his thing. There should not be primaries. And so I'm like, really? So you thought that Henry Cuellar deserved to have the full backing and have all of leadership go to Texas to defend him against a progressive challenger? Absolutely. And you don't think that Kyrsten Sinema should be primaried? No. And if she is, the person who primaries her has no future in the Democratic Party. I'm like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. We've got a problem.
I wonder how he would feel today about Joe Manchin, who was the only Democrat to vote against the railroad workers and side with the railroad tycoons instead.
Right. You don't primary a sitting elected official. That's his belief.
You know something? I wish I could be arguing with him. But I will tell you, in some districts that are so overwhelmingly red or overwhelmingly blue, if there's no primary, there's no democracy.
Of course.
I mean, I can see his case. I don't agree with him, but I can see his case in a swing district, why you can't do it. Okay, I don't agree, but I understand it. But what happens when you're in, like, you know, a D plus 30 district and there's no possibility for any accountability from the other party, and the only way, the only accountability at all is through a primary. And he's still upset about that?
I guess.
No, maybe he's not.
Well, and the thing is about Sean Patrick Maloney, he's incensed that Jamal Bowman, how dare he, that he's the guy in charge. Like, excuse me, Jamal Bowman.
What is he saying about Jamal Bowman?
That he had no right to, you know, that Sean Patrick Maloney had every right to take whichever district he wanted to run in, and he blames those who criticized him, including Jamal Bowman, for losing.
You don't mean Jamal, you mean Mondaire Jones.
Oh, Mondaire Jones, I'm sorry, Mondaire Jones. You're absolutely right. So,
but the problem is that Mondaire would have won the seat.
Exactly.
And this guy lost the seat.
Exactly. Exactly. And so,
I mean,
you know,
he moved into Mondaire's district. People like Mondaire in the district.
He was representing
them. And Sean Patrick Maloney didn't lose by a lot. He lost by a very small amount. And certainly those were people who would have voted for Mondaire Jones.
That's
and
right.
They went after Sean Patrick Maloney. He lost. I think he's the first Democrat to lose the first DCCC chair to lose a seat in, I don't know, 40 years or something.
See, he believed that the whole caucus should have been protecting Sean Patrick Maloney because he was doing the job of getting...
What do you mean believe they should have been? They were.
God. Well, obviously, Mondaire Jones didn't, so it's his fault.
It was Mondaire Jones' district, and what did he do?
He
raised
took it
the
over.
White flag and he moved to another district.
I know.
Foolishly.
Exactly. He shouldn't have done it. He should have stayed there.
I think Mondaire was great. I hope he runs for the district again in 2 years. But he didn't. I think he made a mistake. He doesn't like to hear that. But I think he made a mistake when he gave up. When Sean Patrick Maloney said, I'm moving into the district, Mondaire should have said, yeah, well, you got a primary.
Right. I agree. All right. So that happened this week. And then today. So this is, we've been talking about this impending railroad strike. And I'm not a Biden basher. I don't hate him the way you do. But in this case, I'm, as my father would say, I'm so disappointed. This is supposed to be the union guy. He's the labor guy.
Oh, yeah.
And so
he's the union guy when it's easy.
Yeah, right. So the union negotiated, except the problem is there are 12 unions representing 115,000 railroad workers. Four of them said no to this deal that was hammered out with the help of Marty Walsh, the labor secretary, and the 12 unions and the workers. Eight of them said, yes, this is good, we'll take it. The other four said, you know what? We need some paid sick time. We have no paid sick time.
I had more members than the
other eight. Okay, so there's that too. But it doesn't matter. They also had an agreement that, you know, they're working together. They're going to negotiate as one. And if not everybody goes along with it, then they don't go along with it. And yes, he's the train guy too. So he's like... and Rubin says railroad strike now, LOL, no, because Congress passed a law saying you take the deal that was negotiated for you. You cannot strike. I don't know how that's legal, but apparently there was some Railroad Act of 1937 or something that makes it okay to do that. So,
right, so they can arrest like 130,000 union workers if they want. The union should just say, screw you. What I, you know, even better than that would be a general strike starting tomorrow. That's what I think would be awesome.
Right.
But, you know, I don't see that happening.
Right.
But
so who steps up? Bernie Sanders. Right, Bernie Sanders.
Congress has no real right. They think they have a right.
None at all.
They don't have a right to tell these workers that they have to work.
You have to take this contract. I guess they could quit their jobs and find a job that pays you if you have a sick day. When you're under contract, it's one thing if you're an hourly employee, I get it. But if you have a contract and you're paid a salary, you're out sick. And they're going to dock them for going to the doctor. If you get COVID, sorry, you're shit out of luck. You don't get a paycheck. So Bernie Sanders says, you know what? Let's introduce a companion bill. Let's give them 7 days of sick pay. And they vote on it.
But
and
the unions were asking for 15.
I thought they were asking for 4.
Biden gave them 1.
Right, Biden gave them 1.
And it wasn't just Bernie, by the way. It was Bernie in the Senate and the Progressive Caucus in the House.
Right. So they come up with this. It passes in the House narrowly, but it passes. And
it passes with every single Democrat.
Every
single one of them.
And three Republicans.
And only three
Republicans, I should say. Adam Kinzinger wasn't there, didn't vote. Liz Cheney said, hell no, you don't get paid sick leave, just in case anyone was feeling. I know she is, but I feel like I have to keep saying that because there are people on the left who want to make her into a hero. She's good on some things. But she's Republican.
She's heroic on certain things, but you know, nothing that has to do that doesn't have to do with Trump.
That's right.
She's good on things that have to do with
That's
Trump.
That's right. But she's certainly not she's not one of us. Let's put it that way. And she doesn't think that union workers deserve the right to collectively bargain. I guess.
Pro gay now too. I forgot.
Oh, she's pro gay now too because of her sister. So.
Right. She used to not be pro-gay because of her sister. She used to be anti-gay, and
right.
She still had that same gay sister. But now she's pro-gay.
Right. Basically, it's now left in the Republicans' court because, of course, Joe Manchin says, "Hell no! Why would I give them paid time off with my Lamborghini and my yacht that I live on?"
Yacht.
Fuck you. You work for peanuts, and you work when you're sick. I don't care. Just work. Do what we tell you to do.
And very, very heavily, the Republicans and Manchin were very, very heavily lobbied by the railroad lobbyists and the Better Business Bureau, not Better Business Bureau, what is it called? The
Chamber of Commerce?
I forgot what it's called.
Chamber of Commerce?
The main business lobbying firm.
Right. That's not the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Yes, that's exactly I meant, the U.S. Gotcha. Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, so... but there were some strange bedfellows. They get Ted Cruz. They get Josh Hawley. They get Marco Rubio voting with the progressives to say, yeah, give them the paid sick days. But
did you see my post about that?
No.
So towards the bottom of the post, I had Bernie. This is literally, I'm not making this up. This is what actually happened.
Oh, I
Bernie
did see
goes
it.
Up
I
to Ted Cruz and says, I always knew you were a socialist.
Well, and then I heard Ted Cruz came over and fist bumped him.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's kind of weird, but strange bedfellows. But, you know, and Joe Manchin can't give, I'm perplexed.
Well, and funny enough, Manchin said, if Biden would have asked him, he would have voted for it. But
right.
He said Biden wasn't
lobbying for it. He said Biden didn't lobby for it, didn't ask us to do it. So why should I do the right thing? Biden didn't tell us to do it. Why should I do it?
And every other Democrat voted yes.
Every other one. So this is why I'm feeling like this today and thinking I wish it was tomorrow when I could just be talking music with Bob Ezrin. But we'll do that tomorrow. Today, I got to get it out. I just got to get it out because I'm perplexed. I'm upset. I'm perplexed. Will we survive? Yes. Will the railroad workers? Probably not. Some of them, if they can't take a sick day, maybe they won't survive. I can't. This is what unions are for. They're the ones who got us a 5-day work week, who got us paid time off, paid vacation. And now Joe Biden is saying, well, Congress can tell them, no, you just have to deal.
Congress can say whatever they want. The unions can just say, screw you.
Yeah, but will they?
No, I don't think that they will. Certainly in terms of a general strike, I don't see that happening. But in terms of a railroad strike, we'll see. I mean, a lot of it is going to have to do with the how strongly the workers feel about it. Because, you know, I guess what's going to happen now is the unions will put this up to a vote again. And, you know, if enough members say, no, we want to strike, what is Congress going to do?
I don't know. Look, you know, work with them. It's not like they're asking for the world. They're asking for a week of sick days. That's it.
Two weeks. 15 days.
Okay, that's what they asked for. But there was some talk of 4 days, and then Bernie's thing was 7. So give them 7. That's what negotiating is. It's give and take. It's not 1. It's 7. Meet us halfway, but work with them.
You know, let's start at 15, where they are, what they're entitled to,
right,
and what they ask for. And then if it gets negotiated down to 15, it gets negotiated down. If we ask for 15, it's going to get negotiated down
to 7. But negotiate. Don't just say no sick leave for you. And take, you know, there was a rhyme when Allison was little that I learned from my sister as she's with her kids. You get what you get and you don't get upset. And I hear that. It's like, that's Joe Biden talking to these poor workers. You get what you get and you don't get upset. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
Oh. So.
Joe Biden, the union busting president.
That's amazing. That's honestly, I expected better. I really did.
And did I?
No. You didn't.
Exactly right. I did not. This is exactly what I expected from Joe Biden.
Oh, my God. Oh, and then this comes, I hate to say it, you know, look, we're all getting old and we are going to start seeing many of our, I hate to say it, our icons leave. And Christine.
Danny Kalb.
And what?
Danny Kalb.
Who's Danny Kalb?
Danny Kalb, K-A-L-B, was the lead guitar player in the Blues Project, which is a little bit before your time, but maybe you knew about them after your time.
Mike Bloomfield or no? Different Blues.
No, Mike Bloomfield was in Paul Butterfield's band.
The Blues.
And the bands, the Blues Project and Paul Butterfield would often play together.
Okay, that's why I made the connection there. But yeah, so what, did he die too?
He died about a week ago.
Oh.
He was 80, oh. and I think he was suffering from dementia, and he was living in a
hospice.
Like an elderly care center in Brooklyn.
Okay. Oh.
And he died.
Yeah, and then yesterday.
Shane, people who aren't familiar with the Blues Project should go and listen to their first album, which I think is called Live at the Cafe Ogogo.
Uh huh.
And they were important to me because it was they were like the first band that I sort of got friendly with.
Oh, wow.
And Danny Kalb was extremely political. He was, you know, very, very, very left-wing and didn't make any bones about it and didn't want to hear from a bunch of right-wingers, like, saying anything about how, you know, bands should just play their music and shut up.
Right.
He was really good. And then, of course, I know where you were going with this, which is Christine.
Yes.
Who, you know, I knew personally because ran Reprise Records.
Oh, that's right. When, duh.
When Fleetwood Mac went over from Warner's. And we took them at Reprise.
Of course,
and put out
you did.
That wonderful live album.
I was there at the taping, the dance. I was there both nights, which was just magical. I never got to meet Christine. I met the rest of them, but I never got to meet her. But, you know, I reached out her, one of the co-manager of Fleetwood Mac, who is Stevie's manager, is an old dear friend of mine. And I just sent her a text today. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I thought of her immediately when I heard the news. And I, so we texted back and forth and I said, but I'll tell you the outpouring of love for her is pretty encouraging. She said, I wish you could see what's going on here. Her office is apparently swamped. I said, you know,
Photoshop.
I'm sorry, what?
a florist shop.
I guess. But the outpouring of love for Christine McVie, who is probably the least flashy of Fleetwood Mac. You know, she was not the person out in front that you think of when you think Fleetwood Mac. And I'm glad
she spoke with her songs.
She did. And she wrote most of the biggest hits.
That's right.
Yeah.
She did.
So,
People are shocked because they always think it was Stevie and Lindsay who did write some really great songs also. But most of the really, really big hits that went way up the charts,
those
are Christine's songs.
She wrote Don't Stop.
I mean,
Stop.
People think of Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow because of Bill Clinton using it as his campaign theme song. That was Christine.
That's right. Yes. So it's a loss. And, the thing that I said yesterday,
When you think about the number of people throughout the world that she touched with her music and who there was joy, even if it was momentary joy, she brought so much joy to so many people. And tell me a contemporary politician who's been able to reach that many people and bring so much joy to their lives.
Nobody.
Aside from Bernie.
Yeah, right. Aside from Bernie, nobody. And here's the thing. The beautiful thing about an artist like a Christine McVie, the legendary Christine Perfect, which was the first time I heard her, was that album so long ago.
Chicken Shack album? Oh no, her
the
solo
legendary
record.
Christine Perfect album, which I don't think you can get anymore, but I remember that from when I was in college. And actually, it wasn't the first time I heard her because I heard Fleetwood Mac before that. But when I started in college radio, my boyfriend at the time brought the album into the station one night and said, "You got to hear this." And now I looked it up last night and I think you can buy it for like $80. Probably more now. Anyway.
I can't imagine why someone named Christine Perfect
would change her name
for any reason in the world.
I have no idea. She married John McVie, but they divorced. She could have taken her name back because her name was Christine Perfect. It doesn't get more perfect than that. But I guess she's known as Christine McVie. But, the music lives on forever. And like I said, I never got to meet her. So, she will live on in that sense. Yes, this hurts her friends and family and people who knew her. But honestly, her music will live on forever. And that's the gift that that musicians give us.
Yep. So, especially ones who are so prolific the way she was. So talented. Just amazing. I mean, there are not a lot of people who have done what she did. I mean, her achievements are just absolutely incredible.
Huge. Huge. And Stevie wrote a very nice, handwritten note that's now all over the internet. And apparently she said she was my best friend. And I didn't know she was sick until a few days ago. And I said I was going to fly to London, and they told me to wait. She said, "I so wish I was there." That's got to hurt. See, that hurts just thinking about that you don't get to say goodbye to your best friend. Since she said since the first day of 1975, she was my best friend. So... and this is going to keep happening. So I need to brace myself because our heroes and musical icons and the people who formed our music was such a formative part of my growing up that we're going to start losing them. And I just need to prepare myself for it, I guess.
Well, we have been losing them even when they were young. I mean, you're talking about losing them, in their 70s and 80s.
Right.
She was 79.
Yes.
But when you think back to people in their 20s, that's pretty tragic as well, whether it's Jim Morrison or Jimi Hendrix.
Or Janis Joplin.
Or
Amy Winehouse.
Yeah. More currently.
That's right. Yeah, well, it's part of the circle of life. And it still hurts. You're still going to go through the grieving process. But the thing about, the gift that musicians give us is the music lives on. Look, I've been listening to a lot of Kevin Gilbert stuff lately, who was an old friend and died way too soon. And I just think of all the music that we could have gotten that we'll never hear. So
think of Tim Buckley.
Tim Buckley, another one. That's right. Jeff Buckley.
Exactly. His son. How tragic that was.
Very. Kurt Cobain. I know we could go on forever. That's it. But the ones who have kept going, who are still touring in their 70s. Look, I just saw there was an article in the paper about Daryl Hall and Todd Rundgren, and they're touring together. Well, Daryl Hall is 79 and Todd Rundgren is 74. It's hard to think of it in those terms because now I know many people in their 70s and they don't seem old to me at all.
You know, interesting enough, Roland was just visiting his family in Maine, and he was and Roland is a lot younger than me, and he was saying that, you know, his mother and his mother's friends are my age, and he said they're really old.
Yeah.
They seem old, they walk old, they talk old, everything about them is old, and he said it just makes you seem like a young guy.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I got into another old friendly acquaintance has a new book out. About, you know, getting your next job and you know, keeping going and getting a second lease on a career. And it's like, I'm 63. I've applied for a number of jobs in the past year. The majority of them, even though I've got great credentials, I've got a pretty stellar resume, I'm qualified. And, oh, Daryl Hall, 76. Sorry about that. I said 79. Most of them don't even give me the courtesy of a reply, like a thanks, but no thanks. I get nothing because I'm invisible in this industry because nobody wants a 63-year-old disc jockey.
younger.
Right, and younger. I mean, they want someone who's 30. I get it. That's when
You sound younger. You don't sound like you're in your 60s.
Right, and I don't feel like I am. You know, I'm the same person I was 20, 30 years ago. But
the you know, the depth and wealth that you could bring, having, you know, knowing artists who didn't just start 2 years ago.
Exactly. But I will tell you something. Rolling Stone just came out with their list of the 100 best albums of 2022.
How many of them had you heard of?
Maybe five. And I'm not kidding. Maybe five.
Oh, maybe five. I thought you said 85 and
no,
I was passed out.
Maybe five. Maybe 10. Like, I'd heard the names, but I hadn't heard the music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so out of the loop. So, look, but I could work at a classic rock station or a AAA station. I just couldn't do a modern music station. But, yeah, we're immature seniors. I like that. All right.
A lot of the modern rock stations, from what I'm hearing, are really now kind of oldies stations.
And a lot of them are, they're either oldies or they're hip hop. There's like no in between. So I don't know. Even the station, look, if I were still in LA, I'd probably be at KCSN 88.5. And from what I hear, they just changed their format basically to be more hip hop, more current, and I wouldn't fit in there. Oh, well, I got to do my own thing then.
What are stations doing about Kanye? Are they still playing Kanye or they stopped?
I certainly hope they've stopped. You heard his latest today?
Oh, yeah. Huh. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm just, I need a break. I need a break. All right. With that, we're at the end of the hour. Howie Klein, thank you. You've helped me today. And the news about Ted Lieu is wonderful. So we do have a voice in leadership.
And you know that Ted won by a landslide, right?
Yeah, I know it was big. I know it was good.
Yeah, I mean, it was the only leadership position where they actually voted. The rest of them were all like by acclamation. There were four contestants, four people trying out for this job, and they would eliminate one at a time. Ted led in every single round, and in the end, he had double the votes of the next the only other person who was left in it. And the others were all New Dems, and you know, endorsed by New Dems, endorsed by conservative organizations, and they were all terrible. And Ted got it by a landslide. I was so happy.
That's great. Well, that's encouraging. I can take that and build on it. That's what I needed to hear. I mean, seriously, that's a good thing. Ted Lieu is our hope for the future.
Well, he'll be in the room when the decisions
are
made, and he is not shy about speaking out.
No, and that's great. I you know, he is one of the few that I trust to be in the room when the decisions are made, so I'm glad to hear it. I'm very glad to hear it. All right, don't forget tomorrow, Bob Ezrin on the show. So, Howie Klein, I'll talk to you next week, and hopefully I'll be in a better mood.
Me too, but today was a good show.
Yes, it was. I thought so. All right, as always, thank you, and have a great week, and I'll see you next week.
You too. Bye.
Bye. All right. With that, we're done. Again, tomorrow, if you want politics, don't be here tomorrow. If you want an escape, you want to hear about old old. You want to hear about some of the great, I guess I should put me back up because I'm still talking. Some of the great artists. You want to hear a wonderful story about the making of Pink Floyd's The Wall. You want to hear about David Gilmour's first album, how he became a solo artist and how he wrote the songs. Tomorrow, Bob Ezrin. And if you're not familiar with him, go Google him. You'll be really impressed. And on top of it, he's just a really good person, which is what you want to hear about your like rock heroes. All right, so that's tomorrow. So the weekend actually starts now. Thank you for listening, everybody. I'll leave you with the news. Just know this was recorded this morning before Congress sold out organized labor. All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to December. November certainly ended with a bang, beginning with the House Democrats passing the torch. Hakeem Jeffries was chosen, reportedly unanimously, to lead the House Democrats going forward. He makes history as the first black lawmaker to lead any party in Congress, and he succeeds Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who held the position for two decades, she too making history as the first woman in that role. This change marks a generational shift that many, including myself, have argued was long overdue. As for the other two members of the Democratic House leadership triumvirate, her second in command, House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, said he'd step aside as well, clearing the way for Representative Catherine Clark of Massachusetts to fill that role in the 118th Congress. And then there's Jim Clyburn, who's been the third-ranking Democrat in the House as caucus leader. But Clyburn apparently decided that at age 82, he wants to remain in leadership, though he said he'd settle for the number four slot as assistant leader, which would fall behind the new caucus chair, which will be California Congressman Pete Aguilar. But another younger member had already declared his candidacy for the assistant leader position, Colorado Congressman Joe Neguse. Neguse, who is also black, reluctantly abandoned his bid when Clyburn insisted he wanted to remain in leadership. Well, enter David Cicilline, who decided on Wednesday, apparently at the 11th hour, to jump in. The congressman from Rhode Island, who is gay, told colleagues that his candidacy is less about Clyburn than his desire to see someone from the LGBTQ community have a voice in Democratic Party leadership. He wrote in a Dear Colleague letter, explaining that a sense of duty compelled him to run, quote, "It's critical that the House Democratic leadership team fully reflect the diversity of our caucus and the American people." Well, that vote is expected sometime on Thursday. Meanwhile, Jeffries promised in a letter to colleagues that he would empower rank-and-file Democrats and focus on taking back the majority in 2024. Stay tuned. Meanwhile, the lame duck session is in full swing and it's busy. On Wednesday, the House approved controversial legislation to avert a nationwide rail strike by imposing a labor agreement negotiated between rail companies and their workers, facilitated by the Labor Department. A strike at this time would disrupt shipping during the holiday season and would threaten a devastating blow to the economy. But there are many in Congress, mostly progressives, who don't think it's the government's place to interfere with a labor action. The compromise was to offer a change to the deal, adding 7 days of paid sick leave. That's the key demand of the four unions who didn't ratify that negotiated plan, out of the total of 12 unions representing some 115,000 railroad workers. So, on Wednesday, the House passed two bills. The main one, to impose the labor agreement as it stands, the vote on that was 290 to 137, with 79 Republicans joining with all but 8 of the House Democrats. The second bill was the compromise. It would add 7 paid sick days to the deal, the lack of which was the deal breaker for 4 of those unions represented. This time, only 3 Republicans joined all of the House Democrats to pass that bill, 221 to 207. Now it goes to the Senate, possibly today. But there's no assurance they'll get the 60 votes necessary to pass. As you'd expect, Joe Manchin says he's undecided on the sick leave. Oy. So there's uncertainty. But there is good news to report on a few fronts today. The U.S. economy grew faster than previously estimated during the third quarter, according to new data released Wednesday. The country's gross domestic product, which measures the value of goods and services provided, grew at a 2.9% annualized rate from July to September. That's up from an earlier estimate of 2.6%. Economists had predicted 2.7%. So while the report shows signs of a strengthening economy, analysts say ongoing high inflation and interest rate hikes may actually slow growth in the fourth quarter. But the good economic news may have prompted a change of plans at the Fed. Chair Jerome Powell on Wednesday said that the central bank will continue raising interest rates to cool the economy and bring down the highest inflation in decades. But he also indicated that they would likely start making smaller hikes, possibly at its next meeting. Stocks soared after Powell's remarks. More good news? Gas prices are coming down again, sharply, as China's coronavirus crisis and protests threaten to hurt the global economy and bring down demand. One group who tracks the price at the pump says indications are that the average price of a gallon could fall to $3 by Christmas. I'll take it. We could also take the news of Georgia's record-breaking early voting turnout ahead of Tuesday's Senate runoff as good news for the incumbent, Raphael Warnock, over Herschel Walker. And yes, finally, the House Ways and Means Committee has received 6 years of Donald Trump's federal tax returns from the IRS, ending a years-long pursuit by Democrats to dig into the former guy's financial records. And finally, news that the January 6th committee will meet on Friday to discuss its final report. And as per CNN, the possibility of making criminal referrals. A subcommittee of members is also expected to provide options to the full committee about some of the remaining issues, including how to present evidence of possible obstruction, possible perjury, and possible witness tampering. The committee is aiming to get its report out by the week of December 12th, when it will also reportedly release many of the transcripts of witness interviews. The committee is expected to hold one final public hearing at which it will present its findings before the end of the session. And sadly, it's the end of a musical era. Word that Christine McVie of the legendary Fleetwood Mac passed away on Thursday at 79. But the songbirds keep singing like they know the score. Rest in peace, Christine McVie. And that's just a bit of what's news. For now, I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.